everyone. This is the Dirt Reporter for the week of May 8th, 2024. We're headed right into the heart of the season now, and I'm joined by my colleagues from Dirt on Dirt, Todd Turner, the managing editor of Dirt on Dirt, and Kyle McFadden, our staff reporter, who's on the scene at so many races, and he will be on the scene this week at Illinois Speed Week for two Castrol Flow Racing Night in America events and two Lucas Oil Late Mile Dirt Series events. And we'll get back to Illinois Speed Week towards the end of the show, but we'll go into more in depth on that. Well, we do want to start off this week, just touch on a few of the things that happened on a very rainy weekend. I mean, this was a weekend where we don't expect to see so few races happening at the beginning of May. I mean, there was not much going on. Ty was able to get to one of them at Ultimate Motorsports Park down there in North Carolina for a Hunt the Front race. But, man, we had only a handful of races actually get in. Lucas Oil races were, of course, both canceled in Kentucky. The two that did get in were the Mississippi Thunder Speedway up in Wisconsin with the World of Outlaws. They ran two of three that were scheduled. They kind of juggled the lineup a little bit instead of having two prelim nights and a big finale. They just ran two $25,000 to win shows on Friday and Saturday, because of the Thursday race being rained out, too much rain there for that night. They canceled that early. Two winners there were pretty we're guys that I think is when you see Nick Hoffman won on Friday, $25,000. Ryan Gustin won Saturday, $25,000. When I see those two winners, I feel like, man, that's a good thing for the World of Outlaws. I mean, there's right there two stars in the making here, guys in their early 30s. If they can start producing wins like they are, Hoffman already has three this year. He's the only regular with more than one win. That's a good thing for the World of Outlaws. How would you look at that, Todd, with the way these two are coming on?
Yeah, I think always new and more winners is better. And, Pierce had some streaks last year, and then we've seen years past in the World of Outlaws where Lanigan has dominated, Richards has dominated. So a mix of those guys is good. And Gustin and Hoffman are both guys that we all kind of think, yeah, they're going to be stars, but you kind of are kind of waiting for him. And Hoffman has really, you go back to last year, I think, even his year and a half in the Ty Torah car has really been quite impressive. I mean, I didn't have any doubt in him with all his success in the modifieds, but he has had just a really solid beginning to kind of his full-time late model career here. So him getting his richest win, not terribly surprising. And then Gustin, as we saw, won the week before in the Hunt the Front race down at Smoky Mountain. He keeps that new Infinity chassis going. And as we talked about last week with Gustin, he's one of those guys where, his consistency has been an issue. But I hate that kind of he got such a slow start this year in the points, because Pierce has already passed him after trying to come back from the penalty. But I would like to see Gustin get up there. He's a ways back to contend maybe for the title, but I'd like to see him take a run at it. I would just like to see him get more consistent and do well. So, yeah, Gustin and Hoffman, all positives for the series and for those teams.
Gustin's a good victory lane guy too. Have you seen him when he got out of the race car? Man, he's one of those pound on that roof guy, man. He almost put his hand right through that roof and got up there and just kind of, he didn't stay up there long, just kind of threw the checkered flag to the side too. He is pumped. That was a track that he's come close to. I think he expected to do better the last couple years when the Outlaws were there than he got results, and to him the breakthrough, it was a pretty big one. And Kyle, I mean, you've seen some, you were at the Outlaw races back at Farmer City a few weeks ago when Hoffman was first and second there, and Hoffman's first and second again at Mississippi Thunder, four straight point races where he's got top two finishes. You don't do that if you're not a really good race car driver, if you're not a real contender, certified contender. And that's that feeling I'm getting now from Nick Hoffman. He's breaking through. Last year he had that, that lull middle of the season, but still great for a rookie on a national tour. And now he's taken another step. And I think even Ty Torek, his owner, I mean, he couldn't be more pleased with the choice he made when he almost got out of racing after he, you know, Devin Moran went over to the Roger Sellers car before last year. And now here, you know, he's got a star on his hands. That looks like a title contender, right, Kyle?
The whole package is really coming together, I think, for him. I mean, he's added two new crew guys over the winter, and he has a new engine. And really, last year was more of a foundational year, even though it was a success in I think our eyes as we judge and weigh his rookie year last year. And then now looking on to this year, you know, we're going to start getting a really clearer look of, you know, is he really a championship contender in year two? I think there was never going to be a doubt that he would eventually round himself to become a championship contender, but now he's 24 points behind a Brandon Shepherd here going into pretty important stretch. I think we all know that, you know, he's really good on the Midwest black dirt, but here coming up, like at Bedford and Marion Center and Path Valley, and even down to Ultimate Motorsports Park and Thunder Hill and Ponderosa, if he can get through this stretch through mid-June as the Outlaws head back out to more of the tracks up his wheelhouse, like Brownstown and Iowa, like Hamilton County and Fergus Falls, like I think he will have a legitimate shot at the title if he can stay where he's at and just hold his own going into these next few races or this next like month and a half to 2 months. So, but yeah, this is, I feel like these upcoming races on the Outlaw Tour will be revealing as to really just how strong he is, but we're certainly seeing the fruits of it for both of them, Ryan Gustin and Nick Hoffman. So two drivers that we've kind of have always thought that they have more left in the tank or just more to show. So I think we're seeing that. We saw that this past weekend. So yeah.
Todd, do you think that Nick Hoffman could win this World of Outlaws title this year? He's got a little bit of an extra, advantage now because of the Bobby Pierce thing. He would be behind Bobby Pierce, and everyone would be behind Bobby Pierce in the points right now. But man, just 24 behind Brandon Shepherd, and he feels like he's been better than Brandon Shepherd this year. I don't feel like Brandon Shepherd has been the standout point leader guy compared to what you see from Nick Hoffman. So could he win this title?
Yeah. I mean, it's Pierce's penalty has kind of thrown it into a little bit of a haze, right, and trying to figure out what's exactly going to happen. But clearly Hoffman, with these last four finishes, he's the only guy that is not losing ground to Pierce. He is keeping his margin on Pierce, which is important as you go down the long season. Cause I'm sure those guys, Shepherd and Hoffman and all those guys, they're kind of at the end of each weekend, they'll kind of look and it's like, oh no, how much has Pierce gained on us now? And you don't want to kind of get in that mindset too much. You want to just keep plowing ahead. So if Hoffman could pass Shepherd, get in the lead, and really, as Kyle said, kind of solidify himself, even at some of these tracks that we wouldn't pinhole as his best, I think there's some point in the season when it really kind of settles in, maybe mid to late July, and it really kind of comes together. It's like if Hoffman can be first or second or third and close, then I think he'll give it a shot. It'll be a little demoralizing if Pierce kind of makes a long rally and comes back and catches those guys at the end. But it should be fun to watch. I mean, nobody wanted to see Pierce get penalized. We're not a big fan of all the way that kind of stuff went down. But it does kind of set up a potentially interesting storyline as we head toward the end of the season and those points.
Yeah, I've got to feel like, I think I said it before, where it's like, you know, that weekly Saturday night show where they have the handicapping and they put the big guy to the back of the pack all the time. You know, you got to start 18th in the feature, but he still comes up through and wins the race. And that's sort of what Pierce has to do. And I mean, you look at it right now, he's only made up 20 points on the lead, you know, from the lead, Shepherd there over four races. So it might be a little, you know, and he's finished podium all these races, he hasn't finished worse out of the top five, And it's he is only 52 behind Madden now, though. And that was the one guy that you thought would be right up there. So Madden had that dropout on Saturday, and that's really hampering him. But it's still going to – the other guys, you know, and they have to have a mistake, some mistakes, some big mistakes, and Pierce can't have any. That's what's going to be – you know, he cannot have the – he can't have a 25th place finish and then give up a whole night and have to come back. So that's what's going to really make it, man, every race is big for Bobby Pierce, even more, even if you're not thinking of points. I mean, it is big for him. And I switch gears over to a race that Todd went over to on Saturday, on Friday night. He went over to the Hunt the Front Series race at Ultimate Motorsports Park, which is, you know, owned by the Kohler family now, that owns Jimmy Owens's car and Jordan Kaler's car too. So they've really gotten into the racing world big here the last couple of years. And just to begin with, just what were your thoughts on seeing Ultimate Motorsports Park? How'd that facility look? I haven't been there. I mean, I'm not sure if you were there before it was taken over by the Kalers, but man, it looks, you know, has some grass there, you know, green grass. It looks pretty nice from what I saw from looking from the outside.
Yeah, I crazily enough, I lived in North Carolina for 7 years and I'd never made it there. Of course, that track has been on and off asphalt and in different levels of success. But virtually everybody I ran into who had been there before, they all had something to say about a positive improvement or about how something's better and really complimentary of what Bobby Kohler and that bunch have put into it. It's kind of an interesting track. I don't know if you can tell by any of the photos or the way the video is, but when you walk up outside turns 1 and 2, you really kind of look down into the track, which is a little Spoon River-ish in a way. I like that that kind of arena feel when you kind of look down into a track. I think the surface, maybe there's some complaints about that. Of course, this was a night when they were fighting weather, and that was a problem. But overall, clearly they are putting in the effort to make this a track that you know, can be a standout in this region. I actually was thinking about talking about this later, but I'll go ahead and say, you know, the Outlaws are coming there in a couple of weeks for the Memorial Day weekend racing, a two-night show with a $35,000 winner's purse in the finale. And the Outlaws over time, you know, the Show Me 100, forever a Memorial Day race, and now in the Lucas Oil camp for many years. The World of Outlaws have bounced around a little bit. They've had some homes for Memorial Day, but maybe Ultimate can have a big race this time and maybe become that home for Memorial Day. But I like the track, and again, a shame that the weather kind of predicated the way things turned out there. But a good field, a lot of fans, and I was impressed and would like to get back to the track. Speaking of, they did take the asphalt up off the track. As some people have talked about before, you know, some of those dirt tracks / asphalt tracks, they just cover it with dirt. This one, during this offseason, they did remove that asphalt. So that gives them more depth with the dirt, a little more flexibility with preparing the track when you're not fighting, just having, you know, X amount of depth to work with. So I don't know. We'll see how that track was. I know it's a track a lot of those, you know, that Mount Airy crowd around there, Benji Hicks and Billy Hicks, and who fields a car for Donald McIntosh. Those guys, they would love to see that track continue to thrive and do well. So we'll see. Keep an eye on it and see that it does.
Yeah, Sam Seawright got the win in that race, and that was a good bounce back from him. He had a recent crash that really damaged his car, and he got the win over Brandon Overton. So that was a worthwhile, nice, you know, good win for Sam there, young driver from down south. And we know, like Todd mentioned, how good of a crowd it was. We know it was a good crowd because Bobby Kohler didn't want to throw in the towel when it rained. I mean, when a promoter wants to keep going, when there's going to be a good, probably, I mean, it was at least a 2-hour rain delay. And I think the racing ended, you know, after 1 a.m. or something. But man, you want to get that in if you have a good crowd, and he did. The big story of that race, though, Kyle, I mean, did you take a look at some of this video of that wreck that happened during the feature? It happened with Scott Blomquist, broke, coming off a 4, got into Chris Ferguson, knocks him into the wall, and everybody kind of piled in. I mean, Jameson McBride hammered Scott Blomquist, you know, head on, and Zach Mitchell was in it also very hard. Jeff Smith took a good hard hit in that. I mean, there was just a lot of damage in that car. I'm not even sure if I've seen a wreck with so many cars in it that just was so, like, kind of wicked and vicious as that one. If you see that video, I mean, it was pretty bad, wasn't it?
It was, and you never like to see anything of that nature. I think it was, an 8-car wreck, if I'm sitting here counting the names that were piled up. Right? So, yeah, and so it kind of happened in the most awkward of places, too, and probably the worst spot on the racetrack toward the end of the front stretch there at the flag stand. It's not like it happened like in the apex of the corner, or like entering the corner where a driver has more reaction time to avoid a car, or even in that case, you know, a car is probably washing up the racetrack, getting out of harm's way. So that it just happened at the worst possible time. And I think Scott was running close to inside the top 10 too. So it's not like it was toward the back of the field. So yeah, it's just really unfortunate. Saw the pictures, and you know, if from what I'm reading into, I think that's Scott's only race car at the moment. I hope it's not, and if it is, I hope he can get it fixed up quickly and that he doesn't have to miss a whole lot of time. So, you know, that's probably the most unfortunate part about it, you know, if you had to single out one driver. But yeah, it's just unfortunate that had to happen. And, you know, nobody likes to see those things happen. And so especially Hunt the Front, it's created so much like momentum with all of its names that it's, you know, built up its following and like what it is now. And I'm not saying that takes anything away from the series if Scott Blomquist can't continue forward to run the whole thing, all the races. But, you know, it's certainly something, just a lot of excitement to have him run for the title. So unfortunate there, but glad that everybody made it out okay and that the checkered flag fell at 1:20 in the morning. So yeah. They certainly got it in, so that was good too.
Yeah, made for a lengthy red flag cleanup. I mean, Todd, did you see some of the video of, like, I saw one video that was just a slow motion from the infield. I'm not sure who took this, but it's been posted a few spots. And, they had it right on Blomquist's car when his car broke and turned to the right. And they slow it down, and you just see the debris flying. You see the cars hitting, the crunching of that metal. I mean, man, to see everybody get out of there, that was as hard of a wreck as I've seen in a pretty long time, I feel like.
Yeah, I think as Kyle mentioned, that's the worst case scenario is when people are on the gas going down the straightaway.
Yep.
And when it's relatively quite a few cars, you know, I'm sure vision is somewhat obscured and right. You just don't expect to be running into something in the middle, you know, going into the turn or again, sliding around it, you might be able to a little more escape room, but boy, that just, when guys think about those cars, when you are full on the gas and you run into something like that, I mean, those cars were just coming apart. It was, you know, you feel for, glad nobody was hurt, and you feel for the crew guys who just look at that pile of junk and think, oh no, we got to fix that thing or get it in the hauler. And so, yeah, that was a tough deal for everybody involved there. I did see that one photograph. We had several pictures where I guess Jameson's and McBride's teams or his family's kind of standing around the car in the infield, very dejected. Just looking at it, yep. Imagine, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Scott Blomquist was turned facing traffic right in the middle of the front stretch there and took that hit from McBride and some other, I think Zach Mitchell ran into him. And I checked with a few of the drivers, like Jeff Smith said, he caught the end. He didn't have as much damage as some of the others, but he hit Mitchell as he came off of it. And Jeff said that you couldn't see. It looked like everyone wasn't even looking past their air cleaners on that because the way they just kept piling in. But he said, you just couldn't see with everything happening and the debris flying and the dust. And I mean, it was a wicked one, and hopefully we won't see any more of them. And hopefully we don't see them as we switch gears here. Hope we won't see this week here when we go racing in Illinois, in the Midwest. It's Midwest racing. We'll switch over here to a better topic. The Illinois Speed Weeks, again, Castrol Flow Racing, 9 in America, Wednesday and Thursday. Tonight, as you listen to this, tonight will be the opener. Hopefully, barring any weather, at Spoon River, then the series will go over to Lincoln on Thursday, and then the Lucas races on Friday and Saturday at Farmer City in Fairbury. A great week. I mean, this is a week that it's a kind of a fan's delight. I mean, drivers love it too. Four bull rings right within a little geographic area. It's great for race fans too, where you don't see this very often. Where it's just four nights in a row of big races within, I mean, I don't think a track is within, there'll be more than 2 hours drive time between any of the tracks, probably barely an hour between each of them. And it's, you just don't see that. And Todd, why do you think that would be why don't we see that more? Maybe two nights in a row at tracks close, but the promoters leery about running too close together, if they're in the same general area.
Yeah, I feel like that came about, and I particularly noticed it on the Summer Nationals maybe, I don't know, 10 or 15 years ago when they started breaking up those Illinois tracks more, mm-hmm. and going, you know, venturing somewhere else and then coming back to Illinois, or not running, one of the closest ones there for them is Peoria and Spoon River right there close to Peoria. Often those would not be back-to-back races. And I guess you could look at it two ways. The way some promoters would look at it is, oh, wait, I'm hitting my fan base for a $20 or $25 ticket two nights in a row. I don't think that's a good idea. We ought to split those races up, and I'll have the big race another time. Alternatively, and this is the way in Bob Memmer's old Summer Nationals in Illinois back in the 90s, one of the key weekends of it was always Macon on Thursday, the Herald Review 100, Farmer City, Fairbury, LaSalle. And it was like that, I think, from 94 to 98 or something like that, around that area. And it was one of the best swings of the thing because, again, we're all very close. You could get a hotel in Bloomington, make an hour trip at the most every day to go watch the night's racing, hang out in Bloomington, watch Donnie Moran work on his car in the parking lot at the Hampton Inn, whatever it was.
Yeah, and those were the days, right, Todd, with all the working like that at the parking lots. Yeah, we don't see that very – I mean, it doesn't happen very often. Sprint cars do it, but not late models, that's for sure.
Yeah. So, I love that era. And in my view, I'm on the view of you want to build that momentum of – you want something, for instance, when Shannon Bad, that miraculous run he ran at Macon there on that Thursday night, the next night at Farmer City, everybody was so excited because they'd all been there, and now we're going to see something else again tonight. To me, that's, you don't want to be separate from the other tracks. You want to enjoy their momentum and enjoy the excitement from all that. And this is the perfect case of it. Not only you're seeing bigger purses at these races too, plus two series with the Castrol and Lucas Oil kind of joining together with this. I think, to me, if you're looking at it as a promoter and you think that something else close by is going to be a detriment to you, I completely look at it from the other way. I think you want to build on that momentum and embrace the fact that, yes, these fans are coming rolling into Central Illinois here to go to all these races, and we're going to give them to them. I'm sure that's where the genesis of this Speed Week is in that thought. I think it's great, and I'm a little jealous Kyle is getting to go to all these, so it's a good week to go to.
Yeah, I almost feel that I'll ask Kyle this. Do you think that promoters, do they feel like they're really relying on the same 1,000 or 2,000 fans in this little area? That feels like it's a small fan base for late models. If you're hoping that all those same people go to all four races, if you have them all in the same area, it's, I know you can't overtax, you know, the fan base, your main fan base for four nights in a row of a main event. I mean, they're probably $30 to $40 a night admission prices now for the bigger purses that these are. But man, I just don't feel that. Even if it's a summer nationals would be less money to get in because they're smaller purses, that it's going to affect it so much where like you only, like, man, we only got a couple thousand people that we have to rely on for four nights in a row. So we can't have four nights in a row. We have to space them out. I just don't know if that's what were your thoughts on that? Is it so small of a fan base that, you know, we can't spread this around. There's not enough fans to go around to work four nights in a row in a small area.
The good part is I actually just like tallied up the math. It's only 2 hours and 45 minutes from start to finish of travel between Spoon River and then to the end of the week or end on Saturday heading out to Fairbury. So you have that going for you between the four racetracks. And, you know, obviously, naturally, you're probably not going to get your biggest crowd on Wednesday, Thursday, but it's like, the good part is I feel like four races is a sweet spot because if it's five and if you have a race on Tuesday, it's probably a little too much. And then if you're going to be racing on, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, you might as well add a fourth race. And I mean, that's kind of what Eldora's done here of late, right? I feel like we're at Eldora for four nights out of Dream Week and World 100 Week now, or since the Millions, so, or since the Double Dreams three years ago now. So maybe promoters have looked at Eldora's way of, hey, you know, it's working for Eldora. I know Eldora is kind of the gold standard and the exception of the sport, but maybe there's like something to glean there. You know, I love it personally. Like my favorite, like I'm really looking forward to this week because last year, I mean, probably my favorite week of the year last year was Appalachian Mountain Speed Week, where it was very similar format that Jim Bernheisel had followed. He's not racing every single night during their one and only full week. But, I mean, he races at Path Valley that Tuesday. That's after racing at Clinton County, Port Royal, and Hagerstown that following weekend or that prior weekend. And then Selins Grove on Thursday, Bedford on Friday, Lincoln on Saturday, and then Baps on Sunday. Like something like that, like you can't get much better if you're in central Pennsylvania. And then I would imagine if you're in Illinois, this is kind of the perfect series of races, or just, you know, back to back to back to back. So yeah, it's you're always not going to be perfect, but I think this is as good as you can get in terms of four races in a row for sure.
Todd, I'll ask you this question too. What would you rather take? You want the three or four nights in a row at like Eldora or Florence or Cedar Lake or somewhere like that, where these long three or four night shows at one racetrack? Or would you rather have this four nights in a row of an Illinois Speed Week where you have racetracks, you know, you have four different racetracks to go to? I mean, I personally, my choice, I want the four nights in a row, I think, right now. I like it. I like every, the big races could be two nights. Let's have them two nights and then have a four night in a row like this. It's kind of what I grew up with. I go into big block modified races in New York. There'd be races like a July 4th week, for example. You know, you run Syracuse, Rolling Wheels, Canandaigua, Weedsport. There'd be all these tracks within an hour and a half. You just kept going down the New York State Thruway, basically. And it was so much cooler than driving 4 hours in between a race for consecutive nights. And so what do you think? What's your preference? You know, the three or four at one track or four at different tracks that are close too. Not we're not talking 3 or 4 hours in between the tracks. We don't want that. That's too far.
Yeah, I like the different tracks because it just is a different challenge for the drivers. It makes the night seem fresh. You're going somewhere else for some different people, getting different food maybe. I just love that. Now you can also argue certainly for race teams who can, you know, plop their trailer down and never move it, and or if you're pitching a tent or whatever as a fan, I understand the benefit of that, but the freshness and the variety of going to so many different tracks in such a short, tight time frame is famed. And that's kind of the kernel of the Summer Nationals back in the day. And that's why I think I've always loved that. This is certainly kind of a spinoff of that with these four Illinois Speed Week races.
So what are we looking for here with Illinois Speed Week? Obviously, we're coming to Bobby Pierce's backyard, and it's hard to say he wouldn't win one of these at more than one. But we have the showdown with Ricky Thornton Jr. We haven't seen that. You know, it'll be its first time. I guess in Talladega, they were both at there for that outlaw race a few weeks ago. But you get to see that. You get Brandon Shepard in his home turf. Can he turn around? So what are you looking for, especially, Kyle, as you head in the land of Lincoln to cover this week?
Well, last year we had four winners in four races. I was just looking back on it. Mm-hmm. Dennis Serb, Hudson O'Neill, Brandon Shepard, and then Bobby Pierce. So definitely if you look at those winners from last year, you know, can Brandon Shepard maybe get a momentum boost going into the heart of May here? I mean, he's leading the outlaw points. He's toward the top in the nation in top tens. I don't have the number off of the top of my head right now, but I was looking at those numbers recently. It's not like he has been terribly bad this year, but definitely not up to, you know, his standards. So I'm definitely going to be keeping an eye on the Longhorn Factory team. And but it's hard to get away from Bobby Pierce and Ricky Thornton Jr. with how good that they're running right now. I know we talked about them a lot last week on the show, and it's just hard to not talk about them, especially when they're facing off at the, you know, same event for four nights in a row. And so, which we haven't seen since Volusia at the start of this year, looking through my notes right now. So they've run head to head 12 times, and Bobby's got the 8-4 edge over RTJ, and they've only won three of their 12 races that they've competed in together. So I find that number interesting this year. So I would have to imagine that I would have to say that they're good for at least a win between the both of them this week. So I just think that they're firing on all cylinders going into Illinois Speed Weeks this year, whereas opposed to last year, you know, took them probably toward the end of May, start of June for them to be firing on all cylinders. So the field versus RTJ versus Bobby Pierce, you can have your pick there.
Yeah, so two guys that I want to that I'll be watching especially is one is Nick Hoffman, how hot he is. I mean, remember, Farmer City is one of the racetracks that he's going to, and he just won there in the Illini 100 and finished second during that weekend. Of course, he had first and second last weekend. And these are tracks that he knows, man. He ran really well at all these racetracks in a modified. So I feel good about him. And also, how about Tyler Irby? Just coming off a win in the MLRA race on just a couple of days ago on Sunday at Adams County, Illinois. Keep an eye on him, too. How about you, Todd?
I've got some questions for you guys. What are the chances that Illinois-based drivers sweep the week? What are the chances that Bobby Pierce does not win? And give me a non-national touring driver who is the best bet to break through and win. You don't have to answer all three of those, but take a shot at one of those.
I feel like I can answer that last one with confidence. I think Shannon Babb wouldn't. I mean, I don't think it would surprise me or put it past me if he won one of these four races. You know, he was supposed to start on the front row. Well, he did start on the front row of the Illini 100 and had an axle break three laps in, but he was feeling really good about his chances there. So, and he's had speed this year, really, since Votto out at the Wild West Shootout. So he's my pick for the non-national touring, you know, drivers that could fit also in the Illinois mold that could contribute to the Land of Lincoln sweep, possibly. So yeah.
I think one of your questions, Todd, was what's the odds of Thornton and Pierce not winning? Was that one of your questions?
Just Pierce. Bobby, but probably, if you want to tackle both
Just
of
Pierce.
Them,
I mean, I don't think it's. I think the odds are are pretty remote that we don't get at least one win from them. But I see it happen. I could see it going through the whole week without Pierce or Thornton winning. I mean, there's a possibility. I just mentioned Hoffman. He's running really well. Brandon Shepard's going to – he showed some glimpses there with two top fives up at Mississippi Thunder. Maybe he's breaking through. Tyler Erb, these are tracks that he likes. I mean, there's a lot that he doesn't – that he's complained about where this isn't a track that I'm not really happy racing. But these are four that in his wheelhouse, and he's run – he just won a race on a short track, on a bull ring in Illinois on Sunday. So he's another one, you know, and then like Kyle mentioned, Shannon Babb. I mean, you can never count him out at these. And how about Garrett Albertson too? Maybe he wins. Maybe now, you know, he ran well in the Lucas Oil races last week, two thirds at up in the Northeast. Now he goes, he takes a week that the rainouts happened from in Kentucky with Lucas Oil. He goes to Fairbury and Farmer City, wins the weekly shows at both, gets some laps before everyone else goes to these races. He's got to have his confidence at a super high level now. And maybe Garrett Albertson is a guy that breaks out. So, you know, there's more than a few drivers that I could see popping in there. And where, I mean, Jason Fegger, Brian Shirley, these are guys, and Dennis Erb, he didn't run well up at Mississippi Thunder, but man, he always seems to like shine at least once in a four nights in a row in Illinois. You know, there's going to be a night that just falls the way everything goes his way. He's going to be right up there. So man, there's a lot of guys that could possibly get in there. So I would say 25% that Bobby Pierce doesn't win at least one.
So yeah. It's a competitive bunch of cars. I mean, just the names you threw out there in the last 25 seconds. I mean, only if only one of those guys can win each night, and then think about all the other guys that are coming in here. And then on the last two nights, the for sure Lucas Oil guys. I mean, it is a daunting task. And this is definitely one of those nights and one of those weeks where things, as drivers say, have to fall your way for it to work. You're not going to be able to overcome a poor qualifying night or a flat tire in a heat or those kind of things. There's just too much iron there this week to have something go wrong. So that's what makes it fun. I'm hoping somebody slips in there in one of the four and is a little bit of a surprise. I mean, it's going to be tough for somebody, more of a weekly driver in Illinois or one of those guys to sneak out a victory. But it would be fun to see one of those guys at least run up front for a while and try to hold off that national touring crowd.
Yeah, it is going to be. I just the way everyone is running now. And then you got some bigger names like, how about Tim McCready in the Rocket One car, Hudson O'Neill and his new deal. Those are two guys that I could see, you know, this could be a breakout for them. They haven't been able to run four nights in a row yet with their new deals. So maybe this gets them really into a rhythm with their new teams and this is where they break out. So, man, there's so many storylines possible. So, Kyle, you'll have your hands full this week, keeping track of everything going on, because I'm sure there'll be plenty to talk about. So, again, everybody can watch all these races on Flow Racing all week long. Let's just go with one more thing before we end the week. I'll start off this week. I'll mention Tyler Erb again. Remember him saying last week that he's we had a story about it that he's off that he'll be dropping off the Lucas Oil Series. I mean, there were some, you know, like I guess he was talking with some people at Mississippi Thunder and saying, hey, I'm not off today. It got rained out, you know, so I haven't missed any races in Lucas Oil Series. And yes, that is exactly true. Maybe he ends up running the rest of it. I don't know, but he probably won't miss a Lucas Oil race now because he'll be running these two this weekend at Fairbury and Farmer City. And he'll also, I'd imagine, probably run the Show Me 100 in a couple weeks. So he'll probably still have a perfect attendance into June. Maybe Smoky Mountain would be the first race because he's not a big fan of the Southeast track. So maybe he finds something else, like the Summer Nationals will be running that week. Maybe that's when it is. So, but he did say that he wants to go run wherever he wants to run and have fun going to the tracks that he wants to. So I believe that Tyler Erb, even though – he's not missed a race yet. It still seems like he's going to be going with this independent schedule to go where he wants to go. So we'll head over to one more thing with Kyle now.
Another storyline, too, to follow for this week is Logan Seavey making his late model debut. Now, this is like I'm really interested to see how he does. I think he's very comparable to Kyle Larson and just his talent. Like, he's a guy that can hop in anything and it has a threat to win. So, and then obviously, if we all remember, you know, Larson winning his second ever late model race at Port Royal 2 years or 4 years ago now, geez, you know, time's getting away, but Kevin and I were both there that night. I remember that night, and it would honestly not put it past me if Logan did the same thing this week. Now, it would be a long shot, but it would not surprise me if that happens. So certainly keep an eye on that. He's very talented and he's driving for Chris Bragg, so he'll be in good equipment.
One of Kyle's sprint car boys. He's he'll be keeping right. an eye on. He likes the sprint car. Oh, this is more of a wingless guy, but yes. he is a guy. So Kyle knows his sprint car
open
guys.
Wheel descendant.
But I know. Yeah, yes. I know. Mark Richards spoke very highly of Logan Seavey. He when he had him test a car one time, a late model last year, and he was even ready to have him sub for Hudson O'Neill back at Volusia in February if Hudson had hurt his hand the one night during the Dirt Car Nationals. If he had to have somebody step in, he was like, man, maybe Logan Seavey would want it. But I think he was already running USAC races, so he couldn't, you know, at Ocala, so he couldn't do it. But that was a thought in his mind. So, yeah, Todd, take us home with your last one more thing.
Yeah, this is a name maybe to watch. Jeff Brogue, one of our top 25 voters, emailed me, I guess, Friday night and said, hey, check out the names in the Davenport IMCA Late Model Weekly division. And one of them is Cruz Burkhofer, Brian's son. Brian, who is, I think, done racing now, but obviously an outstanding career from that Muscatine, Iowa driver. So kind of neat to see his son dabbling in IMCA late models. He ran toward the back, and I don't know a lot about what their plans are, or what's going on, but a name to watch maybe, and kind of fun for those Berkey fans to have a new Berkey to cheer for.
That's right. Another new little Berkey maybe we can have here. That'll be good. Keep an eye on him. Hopefully he does all right, and we can have a new Burkhofer. We need plenty of Burkhofer. It's not the racing's not the same without Burkhofer in the pits, right? You know, he's a everybody. Nobody. I mean, everybody likes Berkey. So, and we'd like to get him back in the pits if he's there with it. Even if he's just not racing, there with his son, that'd be pretty cool. So. I think that'll do it for our edition, our May 8th edition of Dirt Reporters. Again, make sure everybody watches, tunes in on Flow Racing to all these Illinois Speed Weeks races this week. I mean, plenty of other shows going on also, but man, it's going to be some pretty cool racing this week in Illinois. If you can't make it out there, if you can't hitch up your car and your camper, your tent or whatever, and hit all those four racetracks, make sure you watch it on Flow Racing. And until next time, this is the Dirt Reporters.